Chapter 20. Charlie put down the phone and let out a loud whistle.
Rosie, listen to this.
He hurried over to her workstation, eager to impart this latest bit of news.
That was Marie ringing from the Lorimer place. Ezra Lorimer, the guy Robbie and I talked to last night in his motorhome. Well, he was most likely Alistair Ashcroft in disguise. Whole police have found the real Ezra dead in his home.
Charlie's eyes were wide with excitement.
Now Ashcroft is missing again.
Rosie swiveled round in her chair.
So he's been living with the Lorimer family, posing as their cousin for weeks? That's unbelievable. How come they didn't realise he was an imposter? Marie said the younger members of the family had never met him, and Rachel hadn't seen him since they were kids. Apparently, they kept in touch by monthly letters.
There's no technology out there at the farm. He frowned. And we all know how Ashcroft likes to take his time and do his homework. He probably befriended the real Ezra and got him to reveal all sorts of things about himself and the family before he killed him.
He's certainly a bloody good actor and mimic.
I'm betting he could impersonate the real Ezra's accent to a T, Rosie said.
And from what witnesses say, he's quite charismatic.
Charlie shook his head.
He had me fooled. And to think, we've had a photo of him on the office wall for the last 6 months. I should have seen who it was.
Robbie was taken in too, so it must have been a great disguise. Charlie went back to his desk. Marie had asked him to find out whether any vehicles had been stolen last night from anywhere in the vicinity of Hawker's Fen. As the motorhome was still there, and all the Lorimer cars accounted for, they were wondering how he got away. As Charlie checked the logs from the night before, the realization hit him afresh. He had been within touching distance of a brutal, psychotic killer. He recalled snippets of their conversation. At one point, he'd said to the supposed Ezra that getting the family into trouble hadn't been one of his best moves. How Ashcroft must have laughed at that.
You all right, Charlie? Rosie called out. I sat there spouting off like a prat to the man we are moving heaven and earth to catch, and I didn't even know. What kind of a detective does that make me?
A human one.
Don't beat yourself up, Charlie. He fooled everyone, including Ezra's own family. He's been living with them for weeks. And even Rachel didn't know he was a fraud.
She went over to him and ruffled his hair affectionately.
Come on, Charlie. He's a pro. Just be thankful that you walked away from him unharmed, both of you. That's a miracle in itself.
He sighed.
I still feel like an idiot.
Well, don't.
She grinned at him.
Just think. We've unsettled him, which is a starter.
He'll not be able to use the Lorimer boys anymore. And he's lost his little hideaway in Hawker's Fen. They are all steps in the right direction.
As long as it doesn't make him even madder and he ups his game, we have enough to worry about with the sniper.
He shook his head, trying to dispel the image of that caravan and himself sitting opposite a killer.
I'd better get on, he frowned. I wonder...
What? Asked Rosie.
The fake Ezra had been to the supermarket to collect shopping for the family. That's why we had to wait so long for him. I was thinking about the CCTV cameras at the shop. If we could get a really good picture of him disguised as Ezra and put it out in the local media, we could get a few reports of sightings, which might lead us to where he's based.
He scratched his head.
I mean, he has to have somewhere to live and operate from other than that old motorhome.
Fair point.
Why not ring Marie and ask her at which supermarket he shopped?
Rosie looked at Charlie hopefully.
I suppose it would be too much to ask, but he might have used a credit card.
Charlie gave a little grunt.
Far too much, Rosie. But we can't assume anything, can we? If we can find a picture of him at the tills, then we can soon check with their receipts and find out how he paid.
He picked up his phone.
I'll do as you say and ring the Sarge. Ask her what he bought as well, added Rosie. It makes it easier when going through the till receipts if you can tie in the goods that were purchased.
Charlie picked up the phone.
Good thinking, Charlie,
Marie said. But Jackman was one step ahead of you. He's already got uniform checking that out. He used the big new Aldi on the trading estate and he paid cash. Rachel said he left the receipt in one of the shopping bags. He spent over £100. It was enough to feed the family for a week and included all sorts of goodies. Marie gave a sigh. He's an enigma, all right. The family all say how kind he was, how generous. Probably part of his con act, grumbled Charlie. I can't believe he has a soft and fluffy side, can you? There was a silence. Sorry, Sarge, Charlie said. For a moment I forgot about your run-in with... She stopped him. It's all right, Charlie. I've not forgotten, and that's what counts. I'll not let what he did fade from my memory until I have my cuffs on him. I hope I'm there to see that, Sarge. Charlie ended the call. Back to the drawing board. How exactly did Ashcroft leave Hawker's Fen? He mused. Are they sure he did leave? Rosie's voice cut through his thoughts. You did say it was a godforsaken spot, so what if he holed up somewhere to wait for the flak to settle? She was right. Uniform would have checked with the few neighbours, but they were all disused barns, deserted pumping stations and all manner of decrepit outbuildings scattered about that area. They'd never be able to search them all. I'd better start with the stolen vehicles, but you could well have a point, our Rosie, in which case I'm wasting my time. Half an hour later, he discovered that he hadn't wasted his time at all. Listen up, Rosie, he called excitedly. A motorbike was stolen a week ago from a house out on Thatcher's Fen, which is the nearest place to Hawker's Fen. A tall, rough-looking man was seen riding it away. The witness said the thief clearly knew his way around bikes and navigated those dangerous fen lanes like a TT racer. Sounds promising, Rosie said. Alistair Ashcroft used a powerful bike last time, didn't he? He must have nicked it and hidden it, ready for an emergency getaway, Charlie said. He rang Marie again. We're just about to leave, Charlie, but I'll pass that on to Jackman. It makes perfect sense. I'd say you've hit the nail, wouldn't you? Nice one. Charlie still felt ridiculously pleased when either the Sarge or the boss praised him, just like he had when he was a rookie detective. He desperately wanted to be part of the team, but through no one's fault, he always felt like the junior and the least important part of it. Maybe that would change when Kevin joined them. For once, he wouldn't be the new boy. He looked at Rosie. You okay? Rosie looked up. To his surprise, he saw that she was crying. Whatever's wrong? He hurried over and perched on the edge of her workstation, looking down at her anxiously. She sniffed. I really love you guys. And we love you too, Rosie, but why are you crying? I meant to tell Jackman first, but... Oh, Charlie, I'm leaving the team. Today is my last day. The tears fell unchecked now. But why? Charlie said. You and Max are doing brilliantly. We're not, she snuffled. That's the problem. I need to be a proper mum for the twins, and right now, that's not happening. They're babies. They need me at home, not off somewhere chasing a serial killer. So Max will be coming back full-time while I look after the kids. Charlie was secretly delighted that his oppo, Max, would be back permanently. But Rosie was a big part of their team, too. I don't know what to say, Rosie. It won't be the same without you. But I'm sure you are doing the right thing. He put his arm around her shoulders. It can't have been an easy decision. Once I'd faced up to it, it was very easy indeed. I have no choice. She paused. Sorry to offload all that on you, Charlie. She smiled faintly. He squeezed her shoulder. Maybe when the kids are older, we'll get you back. We'll just have to see what life throws at us. Charlie straightened up. Well, I need coffee. What about you? Rosie nodded. Heaven knows what the boss will say. Charlie smiled at her. You know exactly what he'll say. He loves his family too, and he'll understand. He'll just be sad to lose you, like we all will. Jackman said little on the drive back to the station. They had two very different but equally dangerous killers in Salton Le Fen. He was anxious that by spending so much time on Ashcroft, they could be provoking their sharpshooter. He had warned them, via Kevin Stoner, to pay attention, and they had ignored him, keeping their sights firmly fixed on Ashcroft. They could be making a fatal mistake. Once again, Jackman was overwhelmed by indecision, unsure of his next move. It seemed to him that whatever he did, it would end up in disaster. He glanced across to Marie, who was concentrating on the road ahead. His phone rang, startling him out of his negative frame of mind.
"Rowan, it's Ruth Crook here. I need you to know that there was no way we could keep a lid on the crisis we are facing. The press have picked up the fact that there's a gunman loose in our area, and I need to make a statement within the hour."
"It was inevitable, ma'am. You couldn't have hidden something of this magnitude for long."
"I'm sorry I couldn't buy you a little more time, but there it is. We have assistance arriving today from the surrounding divisions and other county forces. The public need to see a reassuring police presence on the streets to forestall any panic. We have the manpower now and specialist tactical firearms units from all over. We will do whatever it takes to stop this individual in whatever manner is appropriate."
Jackman felt an unexpected surge of relief, and his resolve flooded back. If the gunman wanted attention, he was going to get it, big style, leaving him free to concentrate on Ashcroft. He said as much to the superintendent.
"It could drive him underground, Rowan. Police crawling all over the town could seriously upset his plans, but yes, Ashcroft is your priority now. I'll give you all the help I can."
"I'm a patient man," Ashcroft had said. "Well, so am I." Jackman's eyes glinted, steely in the silver-grey light of the fens. "It's all I think of, Ruth, day and night. This time I intend to catch him." Eyes on the road, Marie's jaw set.
"I'll drink to that," she muttered softly.
Her phone rang.
"Would you get that, sir?"
she asked him. He took the phone from her and put it on loudspeaker.
"Jackman here, Marie's driving."
"Ah, good.
Gary, is there a problem?"
"I tried your phone, sir, but you were engaged. There's been a development here. Forensics did a preliminary sweep of Ezra Lorimer's motorhome prior to taking it away, and they found a letter. It's addressed to you."
"Ah," breathed Jackman.
"Confirmation that the imposter is Ashcroft. Who else would leave me a note?"
"We haven't touched it, sir. What would you like me to do with it? Forensics have bagged it."
Jackman knew that according to the regulations it shouldn't be touched, but this was Ashcroft. There could be no time to lose.
"We're almost back at the station. Can you have a word with uniform in charge? Beg, if you must, and get someone to fast-forward it to my office. And please, don't remind me about protocol."
"Understood, boss. I'll deal with it immediately."
Gary ended the call.
"Contact," Marie said.
"Looks that way. I wonder what little aphorism he'll have for us this time. We've already had forever in my thoughts, and lest we forget."
"I reckon he'll be wanting to engage with us, don't you? Especially since this gunman is trying to steal his thunder." Jackman frowned. "We don't actually know if he's aware of that, do we?"
"True. But he'll find out soon enough if this guy decides to pick off more victims than Ashcroft asked him to."
As they drove in through the station security gates, Jackman felt a thrill of anticipation. This was what he'd been waiting for. He swallowed hard. What would the message say?